If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Alcantara, Soroka, you look so good in polka. Peralta, Manoa, bounce back for Aaron Nola. Gilito, Castillo, Yoshida, Mosu, Sinto. Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on April 12th. I am Frank Stanfield, joined by Scott White. Today on the show, we'll preview week four for next week. We've got two-star pitchers and sleeper hitters. We'll recap Thursday's action, and we have another prospect spotlight coming a little bit later on. But there's only one place to start, Scotty.
Holy Towser!
That call comes courtesy of the Baltimore Orioles TV. And we've got to start with Colton Cowser, who might be happening, Scotty. Massive game here on Thursday, 3-for-5 with a double dong, 4 RBI, one of which he was turned loose in a 3-0 count in extra innings. He destroyed a 3-run homer, 113.6 exit velocity, 438 feet. He has started 3 straight games, all of those coming in Fenway Park, 6 hits, 2 homers, 10 RBI, 1 steal. People are all up in the mentions asking crazy questions here about Colton Cowser, Scotty. He is 40% rostered. Is he a must add?
Ooh. Well, I would say he needs to be rostered in a lot more than 40% of leagues. The fact he's started 3 games, the fact he's, you know, was a top prospect pretty much from the day he was drafted 5th overall, by the way, in 2021. And now, yeah, I mean, that looks like he's overtaking Austin Hayes as a regular in one of the best lineups in baseball. So there's a lot to like about Colton Cowser, but when you put must in front of it, you know, I think about 10 team, 3 outfielder leagues in which many people participate. And I don't know that he's, you know, I don't know that I'm ready to call him a top 30 outfielder. So that's, it probably puts him a little light of must, but I don't want to like be unenthusiastic about Colton Cowser. So it's, you're putting me in a tight spot here, Frank.
Well, that's why you get paid the big bucks, guy. You gotta, answer the tough questions. Yeah. Look, 24 years old, first round pick back in 2021. As you mentioned, strong minor league career for Colton Cowser. He got called up last year. He struggled in only 26 games, obviously a really small sample size. He showed up this year, had a huge spring training, earned himself a spot on the Orioles opening day roster. And for a while, he was not playing there, got an opportunity, and he might have just kicked the door down with this massive series that he had in Boston. Here were some of the questions that I was getting on Twitter, Scott. So I'll throw these your way. And I guess we can
They'll probably be very difficult, too.
They are really tough to answer. Would you drop Ian Happ for Colton Cowser?
I wouldn't have a problem with anyone doing that. Would I do it personally? Probably not. You know, in five outfielder leagues, obviously, it's not a consideration. You want to think about dropping Ian Happ. You'd have someone else to drop instead. In a three outfielder league, you know, I'm thinking how particularly with as much as he walked last year, Ian Happ was very good for points leagues. He averaged more than 3 points per game, and there weren't many outfielders that did that. Could Cowser do that? I suppose he could, but just because he started three games in a row over Austin Hayes doesn't mean he has secured every day at bats. That's the first thing. I mean, he's a left-handed hitter. What happens the first time the Orioles face a lefty? Is he out of the lineup? Can't say for sure, but I would guess so. What happens the first time he takes an offer? Is he on the bench the next day? Can't say for sure, but maybe. You know, it's still a crowded situation. And then on top of it, you have Cowser. He entered this game with more than a 30% strikeout rate. It's now down to 26.9, which is still pretty high. It was 26.8 at AAA last year. So that is part of Cowser's profile, I think. He is going to inflict some damage by way of strikeouts for points leagues for those shallower formats. So I guess that kind of a roundabout way of saying probably would not drop Ian Happ for him. I think the shallower the league, the more justifiable it is, because you can make the case that, you know, in a shallow league where the waiver wire is fertile and where there's always mid-tier players to fall back on, is it ever a bad idea to sacrifice a mid-tier player in pursuit of upside? You could make that case that it's not. So that might be the scenario where I'm most likely to drop Happ. And, you know, I guess if it's a league where you're thinking about dropping Happ, it is a shallow league by default, right?
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at as well. I was getting all these questions, and I do have more for you, so don't go anywhere. But
oh yeah, that was so. There was no nuance in that answer. It was very straightforward, and I'm sure everybody completely understands what I said.
Would you drop Byron Buxton for Colton Cowser?
Yeah, I think that would be easier to justify. Yeah.
Would you rather add Colton Cowser or Jose Caballero?
Oh, I think Cowser, to some degree, that's needs dependent. Caballero is going to be a better source of stolen bases. I'm not saying Cowser would be a zero for stolen bases, but Caballero will probably be among the league leaders in stolen bases if he doesn't lose his job. And obviously, he's a middle infielder. He's not an outfielder. So, you know, if you're looking to, it kind of depends what you need in a roto league. If you don't need steals, you need outfield more, then obviously Cowser. But if you need steals and middle infield help more, then I could see picking up Caballero instead. All things being equal, yes, I think I'd rather have Cowser than Caballero.
Would you drop Anthony Rizzo for Cowser?
Can't see myself doing that. I'm still pretty optimistic about Rizzo, and obviously he has a great lineup spot for the Yankees.
Would you drop James Outman for Cowser?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, he has the same platoon concerns I have for Cowser, and the downside is kind of ugly, and he has almost no points leagues value because of how much he strikes out.
Would you rather add Colton Cowser or Michael Busch?
Cowser.
Would you drop Taylor Ward for Colton Cowser?
Would you?
Well, that's not my job to answer questions. It's your job to answer questions. No, I think you laid it out correctly. If you're in a league where you are depending on starting Taylor Ward week in and week out, I wouldn't drop him for Colton Cowser. If he's a player who's on your bench and he's expendable, then I think I would. But you know,
the shallower the league, I think there are pretty clear limits to Taylor Ward's upside. And I mean, Kowser could turn into a top 20 outfielder. I think that's within the realm of possibility. Am I going to bet on that today that that's what he's going to be rest of season? No. I would come closer to saying like top 40 outfielder, but so is Ward. So yeah, no, what you were saying. I know I asked you to answer and then I just interrupted your answers. So.
But like, if we're just talking about realistic outcomes, what we're expecting from Taylor Ward this season, I think if we got that from Colton Kowser, people would probably be pretty excited about that, right? A 260 hitting 20 to 25 homer, you know, maybe 5 to 10 steals. I think people would be pretty excited about that to get that from Colton Kowser. And that's probably close to what I'm expecting from Taylor Ward if he can stay on the field. So again, shallower leagues, I think you could drop, you know, players on your bench. If you're depending on these names, I don't think I want to go crazy, but I would try and find a way to get Colton Kowser on your teams if you can. Scott, let's also talk about Hunter Brown here up top. He was kind of the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Oh my goodness gracious. Here from Thursday, rest in peace to the ratios. Just pour one out. Negative 24 fantasy points on CBS. Just a truly brutal outing from Hunter Brown at the Royals. He recorded only 2 outs. He was charged with 9 earned runs on 1 walk, 11 hits. He had just 1 swinging strike on 40 pitches. He allowed 8 hard hits, 95.7 average exit velocity against. And if you look at Hunter Brown's brief career so far, he doesn't get lots of swings and misses, and he allows a good amount of hard contact. So to this point, I think people are still relying on a level of prospect pedigree that we really haven't seen translate yet in the major leagues. Still 90% rostered. Is it okay to drop Hunter Brown?
I think so. And I didn't draft him anywhere. I never thought about drafting him anywhere. Where he was going, you could make the upside case for him, but you can make the upside case for a ton of pitchers who were going much later. And it was pretty ugly for Hunter Brown in the second half last year. He had a 6.57 ERA after the All-Star break. I don't know if the optimism people felt for him, you know, there was a point in the middle of last year where Hunter Brown was close to must start, and then it all fell apart pretty spectacularly. And so I don't know if people were just kind of remembering the good times for Hunter Brown and saying, yeah, he could get back there. And look, he could get back there. It's very early in the season. It's very early in his career, but roster space is limited. And he has been a disaster this year after having a disastrous second half. And there's not even anything you could point to like, oh, but he's doing this well. It's hard contact. It's not enough whiffs. It's velocity down. Certainly in this start, it was down. And he just looks all around bad. So I don't know why Hunter Brown would get preferential treatment right now over, I don't know. I'm like, anyone attracting it, like, who's the trendy waiver wire pickup at starting pitcher right now? Like, presuming like Jared Jones, Jack Flaherty is still available in a quarter of CBS leagues. That would be an easy swap to make, Hunter Brown for Jack Flaherty, but I'd go even lower in than that.
I feel like we've kind of exhausted some of the exciting starting pitcher ads. Like this week, it's kind of been Martin Perez and Tyler Anderson, well, names like that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think a 2-start Martin Perez next week, if you were looking to get that in your lineup, I'm not saying Martin Perez is must start. But I wouldn't let Hunter Brown be the reason I don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I agree with everything you said. Rough second half. I didn't draft him anywhere. I think, again, people were kind of looking at the prospect pedigree, the fact that he pitches for a really good team. And again, he could turn it around. The Astros pitching is just hurting in a really, really bad way. They need Verlander back. Hopefully they get him back sometime soon. But yeah, disastrous outing here for Hunter Brown. Before we get into the rest of Thursday's action, we have ourselves another prospect spotlight.
Time to discuss some of the prospects who are catching our eye from a fantasy perspective, thanks to our sponsors at Hyundai, where they're thinking about every step of your journey out on the road.
So we've talked about Jackson Holliday and Colton Kowser all week long. But what about another hitter in the Orioles system? Heston Kjerstad, Scott's number 33 overall prospect in his top 100. Kjerstad is 25 years old, former first-round pick back in 2020. He plays first base and right field, 6'3", left-handed bat with big pop. He's played 12 games at AAA this season, where he's batting .388 with a .1302 OPS, 6 homers, and, wait for it, 25 RBI. Again, 12 games played. That is just bonkers stuff that we're seeing from Kjerstad. 94.5 average exit velocity, just crushing the ball. Scott, to me, he is clearly ready, as many of those Orioles young bats are. Mm-hmm. What needs to happen for Kjerstad to get to the Orioles?
Well, I think if the Orioles are willing to move on from Austin Hayes as a starter and anoint Colton Cowser over him, which is still not, you know, still not totally determined, but things are trending that way. And I think that that is one less obstacle for Heston Kjerstad, because, you know, with Colton Cowser on the bench, it seemed like there would have to be two injuries to get to open up a spot for Kjerstad, or two players. I don't know, maybe Ryan O'Hearn falls off at some point. Two openings would have had to develop, one for Cowser and then one for Kjerstad. But now it would appear Kjerstad is next in line. His numbers at AAA Norfolk are great, but like that whole lineup has, they put up so many runs this year that that has something to do with it. Kjerstad has been the leader of the pack. For having said that, he has the most impressive numbers of all, and he had impressive numbers at Norfolk last year. Between double and triple A, .303 batting average, 21 homers, a .904 OPS, a low strikeout rate, less than 20%. That's something that I think gets overlooked in Heston Kjerstad. There's so much emphasis on his power, but it's pretty good contact bat too. Just a good hitter all around. But he is in the one organization that probably, I don't know, I guess you could put the Braves there too, but one of only a couple organizations where he is denied a chance to start, just because there's so much surplus there. So it'll happen eventually. No team keeps its lineup healthy and everybody performing up to expectations all season long. I think Kjerstad, you know, you look at what he's doing compared to like Kobe Mayo, who isn't far from being major league ready himself, but he's been striking out a ton to open the year. So I think Kjerstad is ahead in the pecking order there. You know, an opening will come at some point. It'll come. I included Kjerstad in my top five prospects to stash in the latest prospects report, given the start he's off to. But there isn't a clear opening yet.
I was just about to mention that Kjerstad is fifth in your top five prospects to stash right now. Make sure to check out the latest prospect report, which is live on the site, cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball.
Thanks again to Hyundai for sponsoring this segment and the show. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
And before we hit the break, I am a man of my word. The UConn Huskies won the national championship on Monday, back-to-back championships, by the way. And the winner of our FBT bracket was Dan Hedman. Congrats to you. Job well done. Thank you to everybody who joined our group. And shout out to second place as well. Somebody named, who's that? Frank Stamfel. Oh, all right. I didn't realize until this past weekend that I chose three of the final four correctly. And I don't know anything about college basketball. So I thought that was pretty impressive, right? I don't know anything. So it's cool.
From what I've observed, it doesn't really help to know anything about college basketball. It is
fair enough.
It is March Madness after all. It's madness, Frank. So yeah, probably the less you know, like as long as you're not putting like a bunch of 12 seeds in the final four, but you know, even that's not like we've never seen that before, right?
All right, let's hit our first break. And when we return, the news and notes here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey. Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back. In the news and notes, Rafael Devers was absent from Thursday's lineup due to left shoulder soreness and is unlikely for Friday too. This is something that first popped up during the first series of the season and might explain why Devers is off to a slow start here in the 2024 season. Justin Verlander remains scheduled for another minor league rehab start this weekend. Lars Nootbaar will be activated from the IL to make his season debut on Friday. Scott, who do you think loses time here? Because I think it would be easy to just say Victor Scott because he struggled, but I'm not sure that the Cardinals just want to throw Lars Nootbaar or anybody else for that matter in center field. So I'm not exactly sure who loses time.
Yeah, I'm not either. I saw some discussion involving like Cardinals beat writers about that, and they weren't totally sure it was going to be Victor Scott. I guess defensive reasons would be the main reason why. He's looked pretty awful at the plate. But Nootbaar has experience in center field, so they could go that route. I think we'll just have to wait and see.
That is exactly right. The Blue Jays are promoting Yariel Rodriguez, who signed a 5-year, $32 million contract this winter. And he's made 2 appearances at AAA, 6 1/3 scoreless innings, 10 strikeouts. And he is only 5% rostered. Scott, any interest in Yariel Rodriguez? Probably for deeper leagues.
You know, I didn't have him among my top 100 prospects this year. It 2-pitch arsenal, a lot of control issues. Throws very hard, but it's not like he most recently pitched in Japan, I think. Even though he's from Cuba originally. And it's not like the numbers were that good there. So he's looked pretty good in what we've seen from him this spring and in the minor leagues. And maybe it'll go better than I'm thinking. But he's an example of you got to prove it first before you're all that interesting to me in fantasy. That's Yariel Rodriguez. Obviously, if it's like an AL-only league, different story.
I will point out that, like you said, the last time we saw him was in Japan back in 2022. The numbers were outstanding, but that was as a reliever. It was a 1.15 ERA and a 0.91 whip. So, small sample, only 54 2/3 innings, but he looked pretty great in that role. And I already saw some speculation. They might use him as a follower, as a bulk reliever type of thing. So we'll see where it goes. He's a name to watch. Let's see what happens with Yariel Rodriguez. Nathaniel Lowe will begin a minor league rehab assignment on Friday at AA. Brandon Lau has, I really should not put Lowe and Lau names back to back on the rundown because that is very confusing. Brandon Lau has been diagnosed with a grade 1 right oblique strain and he will be placed on the IL on Friday. Vaughn Grissom will start a rehab assignment at AAA on Friday. Brent Rooker was placed in the IL with a costochondral cartilage injury. The A's started Seth Brown, JJ Bladé, Lawrence Butler in the outfield with Tyler Nevin at first base and Ryan Noda at DH. Perhaps we will see Esteri Ruiz back with the A's sometime soon. Chase Silseth, who was placed in the IL with an elbow injury, said he expects to return in about 3 weeks. Taj Bradley has thrown a bullpen session recently, but isn't expected to return until May. He is on the IL with a pectoral injury. Taijuan Walker made a rehab start at Single-A Thursday. He allowed 2 runs over 4 innings. John Means made a rehab start at Triple-A Thursday. He allowed 2 runs over 3 innings. And I believe you wrote an IL stash article this week, Scott. Do I have that right?
I did, yeah.
Okay. I would imagine Taijuan Walker and John Means did not rank very highly in that article.
Means, I think, maybe rounded it out. The last spot was between him and Taj Bradley. It was a top 50, by the way. Usually I only have to go top 40 with that. Mm. But yeah, Means and Bradley were at the very end. Taijuan Walker did not quite make the cut.
Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, has been charged with bank fraud, according to federal authorities. Mizuhara allegedly transferred more than $16 million from Ohtani's account. And as we learn more, we will let you know. We had two huge offensive outputs here on Thursday. The Mets dropped 16 runs at Atlanta. Scott, what's going on? Well, I guess Alan Winans, that'll do. But for the Mets, Brandon Nimmo starting to get things going. He went 2-for-5 with a double, a triple, two runs, and two RBI. Starling Marte also starting to pick things up, 2-for-5 with a walk and his third stolen base. He had two batted balls over 106 exit velocity. And Jeff McNeil, he needed a big game, and he got it. 2-for-3 with two walks, two runs, and three RBI. Not the most high-profile fantasy option, Scott, but any takeaways from Nimmo, Starling Marte, and Jeff McNeil?
I mean, Nimmo is pretty close to must-start, I would say, across the board, and he's performed better recently, so I don't think anybody is stressing about him at the moment. Starling Marte, you know, if you need steals, he's still useful. I don't have a lot of confidence in Jeff McNeil anymore, especially since he's playing with a, I think he has ligament damage in his elbow, right? He's just playing through it.
I believe so. That's right. He missed almost all of spring training with a biceps injury too. So those things could be related.
Yeah. And Alan Winans, I could defend Alan Winans here. I watched a fair amount of this game. He has two pretty good secondaries and had three should have been outs on batted balls that weren't outs. And so the game kind of unraveled on him. He's probably not sticking around anyway. Bryce Elder's probably filling that spot ultimately. So it's not worth getting into. I just wanted to, you know, I don't know what I wanted to do. But
you wanted to defend your Alan Winans. That's
what Alan Winans. You know, every time I've seen him pitch, he just looks better than the results. And I'd like to see more of him, but it's not like he has a spec. Bryce Elder has more potential, obviously.
Yes, and my guess is we probably will see Bryce Elder pretty soon there up with the Braves. The Royals dropped 13 runs on the Astros because Hunter Brown started that game. The Royals, by the way, are now 9-4. They're off to a great start. Bobby Witt had a monster game, 4-for-5 with two socks and a shoe. He added four runs and five RBI. He had five hard hits in this game. 3/105 exit velocity. He's now up to four home runs and three steals early on in the season. Vinny P.
Baby.
Now has had two big games in a row, 3-for-5 with a double and three RBI. And Michael Garcia started to slow down a little bit. Obviously, he's human. He struggled the previous five games before this one. He went 2-for-5 with two RBI and two runs scored. Anything to add on those names? Bobby Witt, Vinny P, and Michael Garcia.
Even more encouraged about this Vinny Pasquantino game, as you pointed out, back-to-back three-hit games. But the first of those two on Wednesday, you may remember me saying the hardest hit ball was only 102 miles per hour, and one of the hits had like a very low expected batting average. This game Thursday, he had one hit of 107 miles per hour, one hit of 106 miles per hour. So he was hitting the ball with authority throughout the game. And, you know, I'm hopeful that first three hit game just kind of got his confidence back. And now he's swinging a little freer and easier. And the numbers are going to start to climb for Vinny Pasquantino. You know, two, three hit games in a row, obviously is a good sign. We'll see how he performs this weekend.
All right, let's talk about some waiver wire pitchers from Thursday's action. Garrett Whitlock was solid up against the Orioles. Five innings, one run, four strikeouts with 10 swinging strikes on 85 pitches. Ranger Suarez makes it back-to-back quality starts. This one up against the Pirates. Six shutout innings, two hits, two walks, eight strikeouts in that one. Jose Quintana was solid at the Braves. 5 1/3, three runs allowed, four strikeouts. And then John Gray with a solid outing up against the Oakland A's. Five innings, one run, nine strikeouts. I know a few of these names are on your sleeper pitcher list, Scott. I guess you can get into some of them now if you want to, but how are you ranking John Gray, Quintana, Suarez, and Garrett Whitlock?
For next week or for rest of season?
However you want to answer it.
However I want to answer. Wow. That's too much freedom for me, Frank. I need to be directed. But what I will say is how I'm ranking them rest of season, I will go Garrett Whitlock, Ranger Suarez, John Gray, and Jose Quintana. Those first three are about in the same group for me. Quintana's a distant fourth. And Quintana's the only one of the four that isn't among my 10 sleeper pitchers for next week. I want to like Whitlock more. I guess I did rank up tops of this group, but I don't know. I can't really figure out what he's trying to do. So his slider usage has gone from 18.5% in his first start. It was kind of a new feature for him this year. 18.5% to 12.9% in his second start to 6% in this start. He still has a new sinker. He threw it 24% of the time in this one. So he seems to be holding on to that tweak to his arsenal. But I don't know if he's just kind of reverting to his past self or I don't know. He's had one start that was particularly impressive. This one was pretty good, I guess, but he still seems kind of fringy to me. Does Garrett Whitlock? I don't have much hope for Ranger Suarez and John Gray climbing out of the fringy range. I mean, John Gray, yeah, I got a lot of strikeouts, a lot of whiffs. It was against Oakland, and he did not look very good in his first two starts, and I don't see anything that changed in his third start. Ranger Suarez, the walks are way down. The ground ball rate is way up. I just kind of feel like he's commanding a lot better this year than he did last year. Is that something he can sustain looking at the what his walk rate has been from year to year? I have my doubts, but he's looking like the best form of Ranger Suarez right now. And I think at least in the short term, we can take advantage of that.
All right. Wait, I think I had one more name here in deeper leagues. Yes, I did. It was JP Sears. He pitched great at the Texas Rangers of all places. 6 1/3 shutout innings, one hit, three walks, five strikeouts, had 12 swinging strikes on 88 pitches. Completely changed his pitch mix in this start. He led with the changeup. He used it 33% of the time. This is deep league stuff, Scotty, but any interest in JP Sears? He faces the Cardinals next week.
He had a very good spring. And yeah, that increased changeup usage coinciding with his one good start of the regular season so far. That's interesting. That's noteworthy. Yeah, I guess he has some deep league appeal because in a deep enough league, everybody does. And I want to put Sears at the bottom of the list as far as that goes. But for standard mixed leagues, not worth looking into yet.
Yeah, and maybe if the matchup was a little bit better next week. It's nice that it's at home, but against the Cardinals lineup,
I've been pretty bad so far.
Yeah, that is fair enough. All right, let's take our second break. And when we return, we'll get into our week 4 preview here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back in. Let's get into our week four preview. And as always, we will start off with the schedule for next week. 20 teams with six games. There are 10 teams that have seven games next week, including the D-backs, the Red Sox, Cubs, Guardians, Tigers, Angels, Marlins, Giants, Rays, and the Rangers. What about the Rockies? I feel like we have said this each of the past 3 weeks. They haven't had a full season at a full week at home yet. It's been split. It's been three games at home, three games on the road. Frustrating, but it's the same thing next week. Six games, three at home against the Mariners, and then three on the road against the Phillies.
And the pitching matchups are pretty tough for what it's worth.
Yeah, not great. Starters sit these, let's call them fringy two-star pitchers right now. Carlos Rodon, he's been up and down so far, is coming off his best start of the season. He is at the Blue Jays and home against Tampa Bay. Some tough matchups.
Yeah, I would lean yes on it.
Okay. Kyle Harrison is at the Marlins and home against the D-backs.
Also lean yes on that.
Frankie Montas, who is a SPARP on CBS, he's at the Mariners and home against the Angels.
Pretty good matchups, and I think that's what makes him a yes for me. Less, more downside risk, I would say, than both Rodon and Harrison have, but I'm going to say yes for Montas, too, with those matchups.
Zach Littell, another SPARP. He is home against the Angels and at the Yankees.
That's more of a points league play, I think. Not enough strikeout upside to risk the ERA and whip damage in categories leagues.
The apple of your eye, Scott. Eric Fetty is home against the Royals and at the Phillies.
Yeah, I think there's some love lost there, Frank. Eric Fetty. I should have never gotten that wandering eye. That infatuation has ended. And I am going to select no for Eric Fetty, even though that, well, you know what? KC's offense has been going great now, so I don't even know that we can call that a great matchup at this particular moment. Yeah, I'm going to pass on Fetty if I have the option of doing so.
What about the wandering eye for Joe Ross coming off a great start last time out? He's home against the Padres and at the Cardinals.
Nah, not worth it.
I agree. I wanted to get another name in there. Two-star pitchers to add and stream for next week. All of these names are under 80% rostered on CBS. Who are they?
All right. We'll start with Garrett Whitlock. He's my favorite of the two-star pitchers who is available enough to mention here. Matchups are the Guardians and the Pirates. Better matchups on paper than they've actually performed like so far, but I think that could change. It will change eventually. Maybe it'll change with Garrett Whitlock. Seth Lugo at the White Sox, which is about as good of a matchup as it gets right now, given that their only two good hitters are out of the lineup. And then the Orioles, which is not such a good matchup. But yeah, I'll still take Seth Lugo with that bipolar matchup situation going on. Martin Perez, who we already talked about, at the Mets versus the Red Sox. So kind of middling matchups. Probably more of a points league play. There's still downside risk there. And his greatest strength is that he goes deep into games, which is more valuable in points leagues. But as points league plays go, I think Martin Perez is a pretty good one. John Gray, who we just talked about, at Detroit, at Atlanta, opposite ends of the spectrum, more of a points league play. Everybody I mentioned from here out is really just for the points league crowd. Reese Olson was supposed to be a two-star pitcher this past week. In fact, was my number one sleeper pitcher. Turns out he only got one start, and it was really bad. So now he lines up for two starts again. Versus Texas at Minnesota. They've been pretty bad offensively so far. Again, this is more of a points league play, but I do expect Reese Olson to bounce back. Reynaldo Lopez, Houston and Texas, not great matchups, but he has the Braves offense backing him. Cody Bradford, Detroit and Atlanta. Opposite ends of the spectrum there. Don't have a lot of faith in him, but he's been good so far. And that's all that I want to recommend, really. If you happen to play in a very deep league where everybody I mentioned is already rostered, then you could look to Ben Brown, who has been good in his last two outings, both of them on the shorter end, at Arizona versus Miami. He's only 12% rostered, and he has a lot of upside. even though he's still kind of finding his place in the Cub on the Cubs pitching staff.
For the four that you first mentioned, Whitlock, Lugo, Perez, and John Gray, would you drop Hunter Brown for all of those names? Some of those names?
I would drop Hunter Brown for Whitlock just because I think that's an upgrade for the rest of the season. The others, it would have to be like I'm dropping him because I need to get this guy in my lineup this week. I'd be okay doing that with for Lugo, for Martin Perez, as I already said. John Gray, a little iffier on that one, but if you have a need, you have a need. The bottom line is if you have a need, Brown shouldn't stop you from filling it.
Single start streamers, you have six names here on the list. Who are these?
Yeah, so I like the one start options better than the two start options by and large. As I mentioned, Jack Flaherty's still available in about a quarter of CBS Sports leagues. The Twins entered play Thursday with the fewest runs scored in baseball. I think they'll get better, but I think Jack Flaherty is really good. And so that's almost a must start situation for me this week. Christopher Sanchez gets Colorado in Philadelphia. So does Ranger Suarez. So I like that a lot for both of them. Michael Wacha, White Sox, is his matchup. So that's basically automatic because they have nobody to bat right now. And let's see, Spencer Turnbull also gets the White Sox this week. And finally, Luis Severino against the Pirates, hoping he can continue what he did in his last start.
Let's slide over to the hitters, the best matchups for next week. The Dodgers, Mariners, Phillies, Guardians, and Cardinals. The worst hitter matchups, the Nationals, the Yankees, blank. How did I miss number three on this list? Who's number
White
three?
White Sox.
The White Sox. How did that just... I literally just copy and paste what you send me. How did I not get number three?
They blended in with the page, you know?
Like, you sent me number three in the email. I just don't know why they didn't show up. Anyway, the Nationals, Yankees, White Sox, Reds, and Mets. Those are the five worst hitter matchups for next week. Sleeper hitters, 10 names that are rostered in less than 80% of CBS leagues. Who are we looking at for the hitters?
So it wasn't mentioned here because we only list the five best hitter matchups, but number six would be the Royals.
I feel like the Royals are number six or seven every week.
Yeah, so let's get MJ Melendez in the lineup again. Let's also get Nelson Velasquez. If you need a fourth, fifth outfielder in a roto league, you could do him. He's been performing well lately and only 24% rostered. I would say Michael Garcia again, but he has become too rostered to qualify for this list. So honorable mention for Michael Garcia. All right, who else we have here? So the Cardinals, you mentioned, have the fifth best hitter matchups. Nolan Gorman's roster rate has actually dropped below the threshold that I can mention him here. He needs to be picked up basically anywhere he was dropped because he has huge power potential at second base. And I think his matchups this week against the Athletics and Brewers pitching staffs should be enough to get him going. Those are some... a lot of bad pitchers in those two pitching staffs. Jose Caballero, I like a lot this week. His numbers against left-handers in particular are amazing. They were last year too. Much, much better numbers against lefties than righties. And the Rays have four lefties on the schedule in their seven games. Caballero is off to a nice start anyway. Matt Chapman, I like for this week for a similar reason. He has crushed left-handers dating back to last year, and there are four on the schedule in seven games for the Giants. And overall, the matchups are pretty good for those two teams too, Rays and Giants, even before you get to the lefty-righty thing. On the other hand, the Guardians, who you mentioned have the fourth best hitter matchups, they have only one lefty on the schedule in seven games, and that's great news for Bo Naylor. Should get close to a full week of Bo Naylor, and he seems to be heating up at the plate. Only 65% rostered on CBS. The Mariners, since they have the second best hitter matchups, I think Ty France and Mitch Haniger both deserve attention. They've both looked pretty good so far. Mitch Garver has not, and so I don't have him among my 10 sleeper hitters, but he didn't. I wanted to get him in there. It's just I already had one catcher with Bo Naylor, and putting two catchers in there seemed like kind of a waste, because unless you need a catcher, why are you starting a catcher on the sleeper hitters list, right? That makes sense, doesn't it?
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, Colton Cowser. He makes the cut because only one lefty on the schedule for the Orioles next week, so hopefully he just keeps starting and keeps mashing. Jared Kelnick makes the cut because only one left-hander on the schedule for the Braves next week, so hopefully he keeps starting and keeps mashing. And I think I've covered everybody. I think that was 10 names.
All right.
Sleeper hitters for week four.
Sounds good to me. Let's get back into the rest of Thursday's action and go into some pitching leftovers. We already spoke about Hunter Brown. Jeez, yikes. Brady Singer, solid on the other side of that start against the Astros. 5 innings, 1 run, 4 strikeouts, only 5 swinging strikes on 87 pitches. Continues to mix in a 4-seam fastball more this season. He's mostly been sinker slider in his career. I don't know if adding another iteration of a fastball that's not very hard is the answer, but the numbers have been really good so far this season, so we'll see if he can keep that up. Jared Jones has turned in back-to-back quality starts. This one was at the Phillies. 6 1/3 innings, 3 runs allowed, 8 strikeouts to 0 walks. He had 15 swinging strikes on 85 pitches, 7+ strikeouts in all 3 starts, 15+ swinging strikes in all 3 starts, only 2 walks total through 3 starts. Just a great beginning to his career. That is Jared Jones. And Grayson Rodriguez, solid at the Red Sox. 5 2/3 innings, 2 runs allowed, 5 strikeouts with 13 swinging strikes on 94 pitches. Scott, anything you'd like to add on G-Rod, Jared Jones, and Brady Singer?
I wonder if it was so this was barely a quality start for Jared Jones. He allowed a couple home runs. Was he able? Who ended up winning that game? So he took the loss, actually.
I think Ranger Suarez got the win.
Right. And Jared Jones took the loss, which, of course, matters in points leagues.
Yes.
I wonder if, like, I'm so convinced of Jared Jones' greatness at this point that, like, is this a buy low opportunity? Like, I understand it was basically a good start, but
is there
a chance that whoever has Jones is less sold on him than I am, and I'm telling you to be, listener who could trade for him? And so maybe this kind of so-so start as far as Jared Jones starts go, maybe, you know, you could make a little offer. Make a little offer, see what happens, because I think he only gets better from here, is what I'm saying, I guess. Let's see, who else should I comment on here? Singer, the whiffs and strikeouts he was getting his first couple outings, they kind of returned to normal in this start. It was still a good start, but I don't think any of us was buying into like some big Singer breakout anyway. And you know, he only had 4 strikeouts in his last start. So it was really just one game where he had a ton of strikeouts. Yeah. So that might be an opportunity to sell on Brady Singer, because I don't think he's going to be able to keep it up.
The only thing I will add on Singer is that the control has been great so far. And when he was at his best in 2022, that was when Singer had a career year in terms of the walk rate. So if he keeps the walks down, it just raises the floor for him. I don't think he has a huge ceiling or anything, but yeah. Who knows? Like, if the Royals are hitting the ball, like, he might have some run support. He might be on a good team. He's probably still in that streamer conversation, probably like his teammates, Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, but that could be a useful pitcher for fantasy, I guess.
He could be Wacha-like. Yeah, it was basically Wacha-like in that 2022 season. But if that's the upside for Brady Singer, you know, I think he can do better.
Yep. Let's talk about some hitting leftovers. Yainer Diaz looks great so far. 2 for 5 with his 3rd home run. And he's got a 931 OPS, hitting lots of ground balls early on, but also hitting the ball really hard. That is Yainer Diaz. Bryson Stott is on the board. He heard that Scott moved him down the rankings, and he didn't like that. One for three with his first home run. He's 9 for 41 so far. That's a .220 batting average. Hitting lots of line drives early on in the season, but it also comes with an 85 mile per hour average exit velocity, which is not great for Bryson Stott. Let's have a little conversation here, Scotty, about Wyatt Langford, because 0 for 4 in this game, he's batting .240, two extra base hits. We know he was a rocket ship up draft boards. He moved inside the top 75 picks in a lot of drafts in those final 2 weeks of the draft season. Obviously, he's a rookie. There's going to be some growing pains. When I dove into the numbers, what I noticed is the plate discipline so far is elite across the board. I almost wonder if he's trying too much to just make contact and not strike out. And as a result, you know, the quality of contact is not very good. He's just got to let it fly a little bit. I think once that happens and he gets a little bit more comfortable, we'll probably start to see some of those bigger games from Wyatt Langford.
Yeah. I mean, if the last couple years have taught us anything, you know, I think back to Gunnar Henderson last year was bad for a couple months and then caught fire and won Rookie of the Year. And same thing 2 years ago with Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt. They didn't both win Rookie of the Year, obviously, but they ended up having great rookie seasons that catapulted them to early round status in fantasy. And, you know, a lot of, like you say, a lot of the underlying stats for Wyatt Langford look great. You know, average exit velocity is kind of low, but his hardest hit ball is in the top 90% of the league, or in the top 10% of the league, I should say. So, and the launch angle is pretty optimal in terms of power production. Yeah, I would not lose faith in him, in Wyatt Langford. And anytime you have a high-end rookie who gets off to a slow start, I think it's wise to show patience, because, you know, I kind of lost faith in Gunnar Henderson for at some point in May last year and said some things I regret. I don't want to make that mistake with Wyatt Langford too. I saw somebody in the chat when we were talking about Colton Cowser said, should I drop Wyatt Langford for Cowser?
No, do not do that.
No, don't do that.
Yes. And look, I would tell people to try and buy low on Wyatt Langford, but my guess is anyone who drafted him, you might have had to pay a steep price based on the hype. So I don't know how cheaply you're going to be able to try and acquire Wyatt Langford right now. If you could pull it off, I would say sure. But yeah, it's probably not that realistic. Some bullpen updates here from Thursday for the Oakland A's. Mason Miller, he is so good. I don't know how long his arm is going to stay attached to his body, but he is so fun to watch. He got the ninth inning in a one-run game. He struck out two for his second save. He averaged 102.3 miles per hour on his fastball. He maxed out at 103.7. I thought I was looking at exit velocity, Scott. Not pitches here, not fastball velocities. But that is what Mason Miller did in this start and relief appearance, rather. His fastball is up 4 miles per hour compared to last year. The slider was up 3 miles per hour. He's going to be awesome. I don't know how many save chances he's going to get, but look great here.
Yeah, he's got two saves now and appears to, let's see, what his last few appearances have been. Oh, well, every appearance so far has either been in the ninth inning or in the eighth inning to finish the game. No, that's not even true. The one where he came in the eighth inning, he also worked the ninth. So yeah, Mason Miller's been functioning as the Athletics closer all year. His last two appearances have each scored him a save. And I would say the team context isn't great, sure, but top 20 relief pitchers seems perfectly attainable still, because there are a lot of not so great relievers out there. I was looking it up while you were talking, by the way. Gunnar Henderson on June 7th last year, heading into June 7th, Gunnar Henderson was batting .201. Mm. Yeah, so just a little perspective there. helps to put exact numbers on it.
And he still wound up with 28 homers, 10 steals, and 100 runs scored last season. Gunnar Henderson. So
yeah.
Pretty bonkers from that point forward.
He was batting. So let me see what the actual. So on June 3rd, Gunnar Henderson was batting .201 and he had only 6 home runs at that point.
Wow.
So things turned around.
Yeah,
in a major way.
He hit 22 home runs in the final 3.5 months. It's crazy.
Hopefully Wyatt Langford doesn't struggle for that long. But if he does, even then.
Keep the faith.
Might want to keep the faith, yeah.
We move over to the Orioles bullpen. Craig Kimbrel pitched a clean ninth inning with the game tied. Just wanted to highlight that the velocity was way down. Fastball was down 4.7 miles per hour. He averaged 91.1. Not sure that we could blame it on all of that on the cold. It was like 50 degrees there. Yes, very cold, but I don't know. Any concern? Almost 5 miles per hour down on the fastball?
Yeah, I mean, how many total pitches did he throw? And yes, it was cold and everybody's velocity was down. It's a lot, but Kimbrel has looked so good so far that I'm not gonna make a big deal of it yet.
All right, let's wrap up with to stream or not to stream, starting with Friday, where it looks like the top names will be Tyler Wells against the Brewers, Michael Wacha at the Mets, Luis Severino against the Royals, Andrew Abbott at the White Sox, and Paul Blackburn against the Nationals?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I like Wacha at the Mets and Tyler Wells against the Brewers the most, I would say. But those other names are fine, too.
Who is your third favorite?
I'll say Severino against the Royals, even though the Royals have been hitting well lately.
On Saturday, we get DL Hall in a revenge game. I wouldn't recommend starting him there, but I am very interested to see how it goes at the Orioles. I think it should be a pretty fun game. Spencer Turnbull against the Pirates is probably okay. Mackenzie Gore at the Oakland A's. Dean Kramer at home against the Brewers. Luis Gil at the Guardians.
Oh, man. Some good ones on Saturday. Obviously, Mackenzie Gore at Oakland. That's...
Nick Lodolo is at the White Sox, but that's his debut, so I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't observed what he was doing in the minors on his rehab assignment. Looks like it was, you know, okay. A lot of strikeouts. Certainly, if you're chasing strikeouts, it's a good play because that's the thing I feel most confident in Nick Lodolo doing, especially against that White Sox lineup. But I would probably start over him. Of course, Mackenzie Gore. Probably Luis Gil at Cleveland. Spencer Turnbull against the Pirates and Dean Kramer. You mentioned all these names. Dean Kramer against the Brewers. They're all good streamers. A lot of good streamers.
And then on Sunday, the options are not nearly as vast. We have Tyler Anderson at the Red Sox. Logan Allen up against the Yankees. Graham Ashcraft at the White Sox. I guess that could work out.
Yeah, that's probably the best one.
Trevor Williams and Alex Wood are opposing each other. I don't know. Both bad.
I mean, if you're for Ashcraft at the White Sox is the only one I realistically want to do on Sunday. If you're forcing me to pick a 2 and 3, I will say Tyler Anderson and Logan Allen.
All right, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thanks, as always, for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. And we will be back again next week. Bye-bye.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing. I feel
it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.